This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
All right, welcome to another episode of Reinvention Radio. I am Steve Ulscher, along with the lovely rounded eyebrows. I get it?
There you did it.
Mary Goulet and Rich O'Tay, man. And that beard is coming in quite full there, my man.
So, what about you, dude?
I'm just going to keep letting it, go.
What does Lena say about that?
She likes it, and I think at the end of the day here, she's going to say, let's see how far I can go. So I think that's the plan.
Seriously?
I think so. I'm going to get it to the point where I can actually tie my beard to...
Not going to do a playoff beard, are you?
No, I'm going to get to the point where I literally can tie it to my chest hair. Like, that's the goal. I want to be able to tie the two together. So it'll just be like
then
this one
I'm
big...
only going to do these shows
until that
remotely.
Point.
Remotely.
Phone.
We're calling
not going to look at you two knuckleheads.
It's all a call-in. Oh, man. All right. So very interesting show. And for those who have been tuning in live, thank you very much. We do appreciate that. And subscribing and rating and reviewing the podcast. We do appreciate that, of course, as well, because the more ratings and reviews and subscriptions we have, the more people find out about the show and our amazing guests, like today's guest, who is reinventing socks. And, of course, that's, it doesn't quite do what Dave and the squad there, it doesn't quite do them any justice. But that is the name of the show today, as we are reinventing socks. It's basically like, as you think you said here, Rich, it's kind of like Tom's shoes for socks, but I actually think what they're doing here is even cooler in a lot of different ways. So let's actually bring Dave up. So Dave, you there with us?
I am.
Hey, my man, how you doing, bud?
Good. How are you?
Good. So Bombas, is that actually how you say it, or is it like is there like a funkier pronunciation?
No, pretty straightforward. Just Bombas.
All right. So Bombas.com and Bombas socks. That is your company, and basically this whole thing got started where someone said to you, hey, you know that homeless shelter you see down the street, the number one item that most homeless people request are socks. And somehow that hit you home. I mean, must have hit pretty hard for you. Why did that hit so hard for you, and why did you decide to start the company where you have sort of this buy one, give one concept where for every pair, or I guess technically people have to buy multiple pairs of socks when they order from you. I believe we can double check that. But when people order from you, you then donate a pair of these really, really good socks to homeless shelters and I think others as well. But why did that statement hit you so hard?
Yeah, I grew up in New York, and, I was kind of, when I graduated college, I followed a very traditional, New Yorker path of just trying to, earn as much money as possible. And I knew eventually that I wanted to start my own company. I went to school for entrepreneurship. My dad's an entrepreneur. But I was very concerned with just, trying to amass as much wealth as possible. Mm-hmm. And so when I learned that socks are the most requested clothing out of my homeless shelters, I had kind of like two reactions. I was kind of like, whoa, that's quite interesting. And it kind of hit me like a Snapple fact, something that I don't think most people would realize. But then the more and more I kind of sat with it, I was like, wow, something that I don't think I've ever even thought about as part of my day is seen as a luxury for somebody else. Something that's so commoditized that, you wake up, you put your shoes and socks on and you walk out the door, is really valued, by somebody else. And that kind of started making me, put my whole life in perspective and really kind of start to look at, what can I do to make an impact on this world that's greater than just making myself and other people more money.
Mm-hmm. Going back to your comment, I was looking at your website as well, that I've been working with a homeless teen center, drop-in center, for a couple of years now, and the socks they wear on their hands, they wear around their neck, and of course on their feet. So they use them multi-purpose. And they typically don't have a place to wash them. So it makes perfect sense that you've started something based on that comment.
Well, and for a number of reasons, right? For the first one, when I started looking into this, I found out that you actually can't donate used socks to homeless shelters. They won't accept them for obvious reasons, right? You wear through them. But also, socks are a wear-through item. You wear them, you typically get a hole in them, you throw them out, and you buy new ones. So it requires people to actively think about going out and buying new socks and then donating them. And then when you think about, if you're in the homeless community, you're walking everywhere. So, you know, you don't have, you know, the key of having a pair of socks is so valuable to you. You can imagine putting on a pair of pants without underwear and being okay. But if you've ever walked, and which most people have, a day in a pair of shoes that, you know, where you weren't wearing socks or not the right socks,
the blisters,
got a blister, and how detrimental that was to your day. And now imagine if that's your only mode of transportation, how much harder that becomes. Another fact is that the homeless community, they fear taking their shoes off because they think that they're going to get stolen. So they keep their shoes on at all times, and so their feet then fester and develop these sores. And for a lot of reasons, you know, they don't clean their socks and they don't have socks. It starts to become a much bigger issue than just simply like, oh, I'd like a cushy pair of socks.
Plus, it's just mentally, socks, fresh pair feels so good. I used to joke around saying if people had a fresh pair of underwear and socks on every day, there'd be no wars. Just feels good, you know. Like, so that homeless person,
I should use that.
Yeah, do it. Have you done anything with Ted Rubin yet, the social media lover of socks?
He's actually a big fan of Bombas. He gives us a lot of shout outs, just organically.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, and let's talk about this because we got to take a couple of steps backwards. And when you talk about just being concerned about amassing wealth, and of course legacy and all of that, you know, comes into play. Like, how am I going to be remembered? Am I going to be remembered just having a lot of money and, you know, taking care of myself and those closest to me? Or am I going to have a much bigger impact on the world at large? What were you doing prior to this endeavor? And were you in a financial position to cut that rope so that you could do this? In other words, is it kind of the story of I have money so I don't care about money and that's where you're at now? Or just kind of take us back through that sort of early stages and how you were able to do what you're doing.
Sure. So I really benefited, I think, from the fact that, you know, my dad's an entrepreneur. He's a first-generation immigrant. I watched him build a very successful business from the basement of our house with $5,000 and kind of the old way, right, before venture capital and, you know, the crazy world that we live in now. And I watched him build a very successful business. And, you know, I think because he came from nothing, he really instilled that upon us. You know, I worked, you know, jobs ever since I can remember. You know, I did benefit from the fact that, you know, he did pay for my education, and, you know, that was a gift that I value incredibly today. But as soon as I graduated, the cord was cut, and I was kind of on my own. And I had a sales background. I used to sell, you know, Cutco knives, and I felt like that was the best sales training I ever had. But, you know, I basically pinpointed, I said, okay, as a salesperson, where can I make the most amount of money the fastest possible? Mm-hmm. And back in 2005, that was in the software industry, B2B. And, you know, I worked at a relatively small startup, you know, as the first inside salesperson. I made like $350,000 my first year, and I was just like hooked on money. After about a year and a half, I got kind of fed up with, you know, not growing faster. You know, again, this is like addiction to wealth mentality, right? Nothing is ever good enough when you start, you know, valuing, you know, how much money you amass. So I decided to leave, and I, you know, was like, I can do my own business. And I started my first company, put $100,000 of my own cash into it, and it failed miserably. It was a lesson learned that, you know, learn how to build a business on somebody else's dime, not your own. Mm-hmm. So I went back to work, and I said, you know what, I'm going to change careers. I'm going to go into the online media sector. I felt like that was growing at the time. I joined an early stage startup as the seventh employee, watched it grow to 140, and continued to kind of amass wealth as that went on. And then I took a job in private equity the year before I started Bombas. And the decision to, you know, start Bombas, you know, was not a, oh, I've got plenty of wealth and, you know, I can live off it. Because, again, when you kind of set that lifestyle, you know, that becomes your new norm. So it was a super, you know, big decision and challenge to say, I'm going to walk away from a pretty decent six-figure salary to essentially make nothing for, as you know, for the indefinite future until this thing, if or when this thing actually takes off or succeeds. Mm-hmm. And I did that about 6 months before we actually launched the company. But it was fearful, right? I went from, you know, partying on the weekends, you know, 3-4 days a week, and pretty much buying anything I wanted. I downsized my apartment eventually. And I kind of really got a whole new perspective on life and started realizing the things that actually mattered, and that only developed over the years that I continued to grow this business, where I still joke that, like, I make less now today salary-wise than I did when I first came out of school.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we had we just had Hal Elrod. Hal, you'd appreciate
no,
that.
Hal Elrod
of the Miracle Morning on the show, and he was talking about how he really had a pretty stellar career there with Cutco. So, sort of on the Sox theme, I'm guessing that Cutco is common. It might be what we could call the common thread.
You're so cheesy.
The common thread of success, right?
Or being coming from an immigrant family.
Or coming from an immigrant, right? I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. Yeah, and that first, because you were first generation, there's a lot of folks who still have that hustle and that drive, and by the time it hits that second and third generation, it just kind of seems to fade away.
Yeah.
Gets very much diluted. But I can definitely appreciate the fact that you were able to see your, you know, your father as an entrepreneur and do what he was able to do there. And so, you know, it's really, from my perspective, it's super interesting how when you take a look at some of the the folks who have been most successful sort of in this entrepreneurial space, that so many of them are, in fact, first-generation folk, and they've not taken any of this stuff for granted.
Right, and they also see opportunity like us spoiled people don't.
Well, you know, and there's that as well. But I think it's really interesting just hearing Dave talk about, you know, kind of where he was at in terms of what it is that he wanted versus what it is that he actually needs. And I think that's a lot of where we're at right now, is just getting to that point where being much clearer on what it is that he needs actually fuels and propels him towards being able to do this type of work in the world. All right, so we're talking to Dave Heath here of Bombas, BOMBAS.com, and more with Dave right after this.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. Mary Gale, Richard Tate, Steve Ulcher, and we are talking to Dave Heath here of Bombas. And it's really interesting because I know that these socks are not just like your ordinary socks, because the way that I found out about this company is my wife is first customer of this company. She found it. They was just like, man, you got to check out these socks. They're great. I'm going to buy you some. So she bought me these socks, and I'm like, damn, these are really, really good socks. So it's like, on one hand, you would think, okay, how do you reinvent an industry that's been around for so long? And you actually, Dave, had an opportunity to work with somebody who's been actually in the industry for a long time and get guidance. And that was the gentleman who was part of Gold Toe, correct?
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Cool. So when I look on your website, I see all these fabulous colors and, you know, invisible socks, ankle socks, calf socks. But do you make the dress sock or trousers?
Preview. We're actually going to be releasing our version of a dress casual sock in September.
Okay, I'm buying some of those.
Too. Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, speaking to kind of the way that, you know, we reinvent the category, and like you mentioned, it's a category that's been around for a really long time. And so when I first got the idea, okay, socks are the most requested clothing item, I saw what Tom's was doing. Warby Parker launched about 8 months before I learned that quote, you know, but I took a step back as a business person and said, okay, you know, how many people are just going to buy this product just for the charity aspect alone? And you know, I asked myself, would I buy that if the product was either the same or inferior, would I continue to buy it? And I said no. So I kind of you know, said, okay, we need to create a product that's better than anything else in the marketplace. And so I took the first step of honestly just like looking down at my own socks. And I said, what are the things that I don't like about this? And, you know, as a startup guy, I kind of wore, you know, sneakers and jeans to work every day. And, you know, I never wore dress socks. I always thought they were too thin and I didn't find comfort in them. So I was just, you know, relied on getting kind of your three pack of black Nike dry fit socks. And, the things I started to notice is that while I cared about a lot of the other fashion elements, you know, I'd buy clothes from Club Monaco and J. Crew and buy sneakers from Nike, and I really cared about the way everything looked, I'd always resort to just kind of your off-the-shelf black, you know, Nike socks. When I started diving into the marketplace, I realized there was actually this really large gap between low-end, cheap, commoditized, mass-market, multi-pack products, and then, you know, which are typically anywhere from 10 cents to $4 a pair, and then, you know, moving up to kind of individual premium price, you know, specialty market, which started at like 13 and went all the way up to, you know, $32 a pair. And I was like, what the hell can make the difference between a 10 cent sock and a $32 sock?
Right.
So I started investigating the entire marketplace. I tried on everything. And what I realized is that the higher end of the market, they had a lot of these features that I'd never experienced before: seamless toe, arch support, comfort footbed, high quality fabrics, you know, different shapes of technologies that allowed the sock to conform better to your foot. But what I realized is that the reason I ignored that category, and even as somebody who works out 3-4 days a week, these socks are being predominantly marketed towards very endemic channels. So you'd have a running sock, a cycling sock, a basketball sock, and so on and so forth. And I never while I consider myself athletic, I never classified myself as a runner, a cyclist, a basketball player, and so on. So I felt like there was an opportunity to take a lot of these technologies, put them into a more affordable mass market price point, but also then changing the aesthetic of it as well. So these higher end, more endemic products looked like a running sock. It looked like it belonged in a running shoe, not something that you would feel comfortable necessarily putting with a pair of jeans and sneakers casually. So I wanted to take all that technology and put this in this very approachable wrapper, where you could easily wear it to work under a pair of jeans, but also, you know, wouldn't feel out of place on a 50-mile run. And so I spent 2 years on product development. And, you know, kind of speaking of the dress sock thing, you know, we did kind of the same exact thing. And I think that's what's really helped us differentiate in the marketplace.
Yeah.
I think so many companies, you know, the bigger guys, the Nikes, the Adidases, and so on, socks are considered an afterthought for them. So they typically either license or sub out that brand. And, you know, the licensor is just trying to get as much margin on the product as possible. And they go, the swoosh will sell it. So let's just put, you know, who cares about the toe seam? Who cares about the quality of the cotton? Let's just, you know, put the logo on and try to get as much margin as possible.
Yeah.
And the more and more I thought about that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The more and more I realized that, I was like, wow, you can actually take a lot of these higher end features. And, you know, the cost of producing these higher-end features was not that substantially more, but the benefit was significant. So I took 2 years on product development and really just thought about it from the consumer's mindset. That's how we approach everything, is what's wrong with the product as a consumer first, not as a manufacturer, not as how do I cut costs, we'll figure all that stuff afterwards. We have to start with the highest quality product first.
Yeah. Where are the socks manufactured?
All over the world. So we've got partners in Turkey, in South America, Southeast Asia, Japan, everywhere.
And it's really interesting. So, and just real quick, is this a for-profit or for-benefit corp? How are you structured?
It's a for-profit company.
It is a for-profit company. Interesting. So, you know, what is, and you look at the marketplace and you sit there and you say, well, you know, if I'm going to choose between this or that, I mean, certainly the socks that you have are, I mean, they're really good. They're not cheap by any stretch of the imagination, nor should they be. I mean, they're a really good, high-quality product. And so you'd buy one, you give one. What would be really interesting, and I don't know if this is something you guys are already considered, but if you take a look at what sort of the general focus here is of, you know, let's give people socks because they need socks, and that's the number one requested thing here in the homeless shelters. How about this for an idea? And this might be a phase 2, 3, 4, or 5 or wherever it might be down the line, but what if that factory was actually run by homeless people? So you gave these homeless people jobs. So now you've got this thing going full circle, right? So now you're giving, because, I mean, giving the homeless socks, it's great, but really, at the end of the day, let's get these people on their feet. I mean, let's give them a chance to do something so they can get out of the homeless situation. They can get into, or probably back into, mainstream society.
Totally. Yeah, that's certainly something that we've always thought about. There's a lot larger factors at play that I'm not going to bore you with in terms of the decline of U.S. manufacturing and the reasons why everything eventually moved overseas, mostly because of government subsidies in those other countries where they valued, you know, investment in manufacturing and we didn't. But it's interesting. When you look at the global economy, I don't know if you've ever been to Southeast Asia or, you know, a lot of these other countries, it's not far off from you know, hiring homeless people. You know, these are people that line up outside of factories in order to have an opportunity, you know, to provide for their families and wait for somebody to basically, you know, lose their job for whatever reason. But we, you know, we wouldn't have gone into this business, you know, to address this point, you know, to work with factories that, you know, didn't have upstanding labor practices, didn't do ethical sourcing. We're part of an initiative called the Made in the Free World Project, which certifies all of our factories as being, you know, child labor free, having ethical sourcing, having, you know, minimum or maximum work hours per week, and then competitive wages. It's something that, you know, they have a high expertise, a lot of these other countries, in producing these soft goods. So we went there because of the quality that they could produce, but then we also vetted our manufacturing partners to ensure that they were in line with our overall mission.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm obviously not saying what you should or you shouldn't do with.
Yes, you did.
I'm making a suggestion.
He said maybe
in a phase 3, 4, 5 would be kind of cool. But I mean, let's be real here. It's like, if you, on the surface, man, I got to be honest with you, I would have thought this was a for-benefit corp. I did not realize that it was a straight for-profit corp. Nothing wrong with that. But when you have sort of that altruistic, philanthropic slant, like, I'm under the impression, obviously I'm wrong, but I guess I was under the impression that a Tom's or a Warby Parker or whomever, I kind of thought those were for-benefit type corps. I don't know. Are they? Are those for profit?
You can still make profit and be for benefit. It's not mutually.
Yeah, if you're talking about the B Corp status, it's something that it's a long process. So we've been going through it, and it's something that we look to get. It's actually not yet a government recognized like filing status. You're still either an LLC or a C Corp. Mm-hmm. It's more so like a certification. And you know, that also just comes down to, you know, you have to kind of always gut check yourself and say, like, am I doing the right thing in this business or am I not, right? What are the real reasons that you're in this? You know, and the way that we always saw it was, look, I'm going to be honest. We know that a pair of socks, like, you know, donating a pair of socks is not going to end the homelessness issue. And so what we think about larger picture is, if we can use Bombas as a brand and a platform that gets large enough where we can really utilize our reach and our awareness to help bring awareness to the homeless community, help bring awareness to the multitude of issues that these people are facing, that we're at least bringing that conversation to the table rather than other people who are, you know, just purely out there, you know, building a company for benefit. You know, we as a team donate a day of our time every 2 weeks to go volunteer at a homeless shelter.
Nice.
We donate a portion of our office space to an organization called Back on My Feet, which helps transition people out of homelessness through the discipline of running. You know, it's so ingrained into our DNA that it's never a compromise of if this or that. And I give a perfect example of that. You know, a lot of people ask us, do you donate the same pair of socks that you sell? And the answer is that first we did. You know, I wanted, you know, the people who I, you know, and I went out on the streets, and this is how I first got engaged with that, you know, after I learned that quote, is I said, I want to see this firsthand. So I handed socks out on the street, and I saw the reaction that, you know, that I would get from, it's not just a dollar, you know, or whatever that you could give somebody, but actually that you were thoughtful enough to give them something that they actually really needed. And so, exactly. And so I wanted to give them that same feeling that I felt and that all of our customers felt when putting on a fresh pair of our socks. I'm like, wow, these feel so comfortable and so great.
Yeah, there's so much more to talk about. Hey, we have to go into a break right now. So can you stay with us for the next segment?
Will do.
All right, thanks.
More on Reinvented Radio right after this.
Thank you. You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. Steve Olscher, Marie-Gualet-Rotorte, talking to Dave Heath here of Bombas. And bombas.com is the best place, I would think, for folks to go. Is that correct? Is that where you want to direct people?
That's it.
Yeah, bombas.com. And just a quick question. I know, Rich, you had a question or two as well. But, you know, you talk a lot about humility and so on, and it's interesting because most of the guests who come on the show, and Mary, you were talking about this, but most of the guests who come on the show, they're like more than willing to tell the world, you know, like, hey, I'm being on Reinvention Radio. You should come check it out. And your stance is like, yeah, we'd rather not. It's kind of not what we do. We're all about humility and that sort of thing. Don't you want people to know? I mean, because, of course, you want people to know about what you're doing. But yet, doesn't that sort of fly in the face then of, because you can't. You're trying to be humble and humility. I mean, and I get all that, but I'm just kind of curious how you kind of balance the two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, humility doesn't have to, you know, define not being proud of the accomplishments that you have. I mean, you know, we've built an incredibly large business, you know, in the last 3 years. And, you know, if I told you that, you know, was I proud that we're going to do close to $12 million in our third year, I'd say absolutely.
Wow,
and,
huge.
You know, do I feel more fulfilled than I've ever felt? Yeah. It's just, I don't need to sit here and you know, justify that by saying how much money I'm personally making. And, you know, again, it just kind of goes back to the mindset that, you know, I've learned that to give is way more of a benefit than to receive. Mm-hmm. So I think that's more of the message I'm just trying to pass along.
That's cool. Excuse me.
You got Rich all choked up here over a minute.
in a way, a little bit, because I was looking at your logo with the B. And it just kind of reminded me, like, that's the coolest part about the bee. They're just doing their thing, and all this goodness is happening, spreading all this, you know, pollination of different plants and things that are going on while they're just doing their thing. And it's a cool logo to have with your socks, too.
And that's the big reason why we ultimately decided to go with the bee as our logo. And, you know, the word bombus is derived from the Latin word for bumblebee. You know, bees are altruistic animals by nature. They're one of the actually... few. I think them and ants are the only true two altruistic animals in the world. And so we wanted to represent our brand as something that, you know, gave back, worked together as a community that, you know, where our larger collective impact is greater when we all kind of work together rather than singling individuals out.
Yeah. And from a marketing perspective, you guys actually, this is something that I think a lot of folks could learn from and certainly try to emulate in their own way, and maybe with a different market, but although this market, I think, is probably about as good as it gets. You guys actually do this whole thing with college campuses and having them become bombassadors, which I really like. I don't know if that's a term somebody just threw at you, and you were like, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool, or that's something that you guys literally sat around, and you were like, we need a name for these folks, and you brainstormed for 6 days, and that's what you came up with. But I really like that, the whole bombassador idea.
That's cool.
It is. It's super cool. And so you, well, I guess for lack of a better term, you recruit folks on college campuses to help spread the word. Can you talk a little bit about that from a marketing perspective and how it's helped you and what the thinking was behind it?
Totally. So, you know, as an online digitally native brand, you know, where almost 99% of our revenue comes directly through our own website, you know, we always knew that in order to, you know, continue to build a big brand, we'd have to get in touch with, you know, the millennial generation, the big buzzword that everybody uses in marketing these days. And, you know, they're just not that active in terms of online shopping. A lot of them don't have credit cards and, you know, they're still kind of getting their lives together. So we wanted to figure out how can we tap into this community and build awareness, you know, among this age demographic. And, you know, one of the things was, okay, let's go to college campuses. And the way that it kind of evolved was, you know, at first we're like, okay, I come from the Cutco background. I was like, let's do, you know, college campuses where students can sell our socks and make some money. And the more and more we started to speak with college students, that was not their main driver. Their main driver is that they wanted to feel a part of something. And I think that's what's interesting about the millennial generation and, you know, the growth of companies like WeWork and, you know, the idea of being a part of something rather than just kind of serving your own, you know, self-interest. And so we found that the things that they got really excited about was not only being affiliated with a brand that does good, but we built the program in such a way that, you know, rather than compensating them directly for the socks that, you know, they either sold through their own promo codes or whatever, we paired them up with a shelter that was local to their college community. They had to go introduce themselves to that shelter, work and volunteer in that shelter so that they can again see firsthand the impact and connect to the homeless community. We then, you know, accumulate all the donations, socks that come through the sales of their things, as well as different bonuses that they can get for setting up events and so on and so forth, to ultimately serve them with the value of being able to donate thousands of pairs of socks to their local shelter in their backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's super smart.
Cool.
So has there become like a kind of like a black market then for these socks where like you say, hey, to this shelter, I'm going to give you guys like 1,000 pairs of socks or whatever to pass out because you just sold 1,000 pairs, and then like the guy who's running the shelter is just like selling these on the side and kind of like supplementing.
We've encountered that a couple times.
See,
not enough. Where
you're so cynical.
I'm totally cynical.
No, there's certainly people out there that, you know, want to try to take advantage of a system any way possible, and we've definitely cracked down on them pretty hard.
what's got you most excited here? I mean, you've obviously got a lot of things going on. And I mean, hell, dude, 12 million in 3 years. It's really, really, really impressive. And you've donated almost 1 million socks. And by the way, is that 1 million pairs of socks or is that 500,000 pairs?
No, a million pairs.
A million pairs. Okay. Maybe we get some clarification around that. Because on the site, I was like, we actually had that debate here. I actually voted that it was 500,000 pairs. So there you go. All right. So actually 1 million pairs. That's like, that's unreal. I mean, it's a lot of socks to give away. Very,
super
very, very cool.
So
yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Well, I was just going to ask, since I'm involved in the homeless teen drop-in center, they don't get to live there. They can only drop in for 3 hours a night. And they're all over the country, Stand Up for Kids. And they have their backpacks, which is their closet, their kitchen, their bathroom. Everything is in that, the life of their backpack. And so we donate socks leading into the winter, and they go through so much clothing. Like, there's this huge room stacked with jeans and shirts and socks, everything you can imagine. And the founder said it goes empty and refilled every 30 days.
Wow.
So the million socks is awesome, but keep going, buddy, because
We're not stopping.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the one thing that I've learned working in that area is that the adult homeless population watches out for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids are the ones, there's so many success stories. If you show them some care and love and really appreciate what they truly need, they do still go to school while they're living on the street.
Wow.
And they do get their own apartments and go back because they are safer on the street than their own family life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Bravo to you. This is a huge thing that you're helping them out with.
Yeah, super cool. Very cool. All right, Dave, so if people want to find out more information about you and the company, where's the best place for them to go?
Bombas.com.
Bombas.com. All right, well,
cool.
Dave Heath, very, very, very cool. Thanks so much for joining us here on Reinvention Radio. When you guys have a chance, do check out the site. Go to Bombas.com And it's really interesting. I mean, I don't know, guys, if you are sockies. Is that what you call it? Would you call it like a person who then it would be like a socky? Is that sort of like
yes.
a... Are you a socky, man? Are you into
when
your...
When it's cold, yes. Otherwise,
you
I'm
live in San Diego, dude.
My,
so basically, you're not. That's yeah. a lie. So you live in San Diego, so you never have a need for like.
Wear socks, I love those kind of cool, comfortable, crazy, fun.
Yeah, and I've tried those these like on, flip-ups. And the Y stitching thingy and the honeycomb.
I like
thing
the blister
that they
thing
have
on the back.
Right, I mean it actually is a very very well
made
sock. 'Cause I always
get blisters in those like Converse.
Right.
Shoes, I do.
The Chuck Taylors, right? So,
yeah.
All right, but here's the thing. I mean, it's a perfect example of how you can do good and do well without having to compromise one for the other. So very, very inspirational. We'd really
So something good might come out of me being here every week.
A lot of good things come out of you being here every week. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. And if you've been rating and reviewing and subscribing to the podcast, really do appreciate that. We will talk to you next time. For Rich, for Mary, for White Wade, I'm Steve Ulsher. We'll talk to you on Reinvention Radio.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Ulsher, visit reinventionradio.com.